Welcome to The Midday. I'm Peter Bryant, in for Norman Gilliland today. And John Demain, conductor of the Madison Symphony Orchestra, is here. We'll be talking about the symphony's upcoming season and also about the big finish to the current one. That features Mahler's Symphony No. 8, known as a Symphony of a Thousand. We'll be talking about that in just a couple of minutes, but first, an excerpt from that, right from the beginning, gives you a sense of this piece. This is a recording with the London Symphony Orchestra and Chorus, directed by Leonard Bernstein. The opening part of the Mahler Symphony No. 8, known as Symphony of a Thousand, a recording here with the London Symphony Orchestra, chorus and soloists, led by Leonard Bernstein. And this piece will be featured very soon, upcoming series of concerts by the Madison Symphony Orchestra, rounding out the current season, and conductor John Demain is here with us. Good early afternoon.
Good afternoon, Peter. Good to be here.
We're all squeezed into our tiny temporary studio here as we rebuild things. Good to have you with us. And we'll talk in just a bit about your upcoming season. But first, the Mahler is certainly a big finish to your current season. And I guess one question you often get is, why is it called Symphony of a Thousand?
Well, I think when they realized that at the first performances, I think it was in Munich, that they had invited a number of choruses from different countries, from Vienna, from Austria, as well as a couple of different parts of Germany. When he added it all up, they extended invitations to about 850 people. And they had about 350 children. And so, not to mention this massive orchestra, and they were in a brand new hall that seated 3,100 people or something like that. You know, so it was a massive space and a massive undertaking. And I think promoters came up with the idea, not Mahler. Mahler didn't like that connotation because you don't have to have 1,000 people on stage, but that's what they had for this first performance, and so they gave it the subtitle of Symphony of 1,000, which Mahler did not like, but to this day has been known as Symphony of 1,000, and we'll have we will have 500 people, so we'll have 500.
That's not bad.
Not bad.
Yes, he was after something different, wasn't he? Because it has an unusual structure and a unique set of texts that
right.
he's using.
Well, this is the first all-choral symphony because the pieces that have come before, including some of Mahler's own pieces, used vocal soloists in the last movement, like Beethoven 9, for example, chorus and orchestra, the Lobgesang of Mendelssohn, even Mahler's own symphonies, you know. And this ended up using the chorus throughout the piece as a main feature of the piece, along with 8 total vocal soloists, 7 that you see and 1 way up high, who's the Mater Gloriosa, or the Mother of God, Mary. And so, and I think Mahler was trying to create a musical universe instead of, you know, just the earth and the universe and space and planets and all of that. He was trying to do that in sound, in creating this musical universe. And so he embodied the first movement does follow a sonata allegro form. So you have the statement, you have a development, you have a recapitulation. You go back to the veni creator spirit towards the end in a shortened version. But nevertheless, it gives you that feeling of that kind of form. It's the second part that really goes into a very unusual format. I mean, this is where he throws everything, including the kitchen sink, into the piece, but in beautiful and subtle and various ways. So the piece there's lead in it because there's songs in a sense. There is, it's an oratorio, it's a motet, it's it's all of this compressed into one piece. But it's all about seeking redemption through love and through the eternal womankind, you know, that through that avenue, which is why the Mater Gloriosa makes such it's a cameo appearance, but after the penitence, so the second half is you know, this Mahler had always wanted to set the final scene from Goethe's Faust, and this was his chance. And so you have the penitents, of who one of the penitents is actually Gretchen, who was, you know, Faust's big love, and then Faust sold his soul to the devil. So the Gretchen has become a penitent, and she's interceding with the Virgin Mary to pave way for Faust to be forgiven and find his way to heaven. And of course, he's born, his soul is born with children. So you have you have all this massive force in the orchestra, and you have, of course, on the stage two choruses. So we have the Madison Symphony Chorus, the Choral Union, the university, and we have from Madison Youth Choirs, about 60 kids, and we've got our eight phenomenal, hearing them last night for the first time, phenomenal singers. I mean, I thought they were phenomenal, that's why I engaged them, but they really showed up and blew everybody away. So it's and they're some of the biggest stars we've had with Madison Opera and with the symphony, so it's really thrilling. The challenge, of course, is to harness all of that.
How do you manage that?
You know, we're performing this piece acoustically, and that's saying something. You know, I'm not miking the chorus. I'm not augmenting subtly anything at this point. And that wasn't necessarily how we were going into it. But that's how we're coming out of it, which, of course, everyone's thrilled with. But when you have seven or eight horns all playing the same note, and it's fortissimo, and the bells are instructed to be up in the air, that does present a problem. So you have to manipulate the dynamics. And basically tell the orchestra that when people are singing, when the chorus is singing, your fortissimos are forte, your fortes are mezzo forte, etc. And then as you get familiar with the piece where the chorus is not singing, you can play, you know, your big dynamics. And so it's great because the chorus actually stops at the end of part two for a few bars, quite a few bars before the piece is over, so that the banda, which is also going to be in the air, the offstage trumpets and trombones are placed up in the top boxes of Overture Hall that are technical boxes, so they don't take anybody's seats away. And the organ can play at full throttle, and the orchestra can play at full throttle, and you get, you know, just an enormous amount of live sound, which is absolutely thrilling. But the big challenge is working balances. However, the other thing to note about it is you played at the start of the show the big, fabulous, you know, Veni Creator, come to us, Holy Spirit, you know, and fortify our bodies and our souls and illuminate our senses, which is, of course, a poem, that a prayer that Mahler was very attracted to. And this is kind, you know, it uses the organ substantially, and we're singing a Latin hymn. So there's a that kind of church-like religiosity that you feel, you know, in a massive cathedral with a great organ, you know, playing. But the second movement, as we meet these different characters, you know, the theologian Dr. Marianus, the anchorites with the early version of religious hermits, you know, that would eventually become, you know, in the monasteries, especially those monasteries where they didn't speak or they were living in a cell, and we meet the different penitents, we meet the different these different characters, and we meet two solo anchorites as well, the baritone and the bass, so that we have so much variation of orchestration, so many different colors, and they're provided by mandolin, harmonium, two harps, you know, these kind of more transparent instruments, along with this massive wind and brass complement. And of course, Mahler said if you're in a really big hall, you know, like 3,000 or 4,000 seat hall, you could augment the strings too. Well, we're in a controllable hall, so we will have 120 musicians, and that's plenty.
And we should mention too, tickets are still available for this, I do
believe.
Yes,
they're going very well, but you can still get a good seat.
And performances start on Friday the 3rd, and then on the weekend
Friday,
as well.
Friday 7:30, Saturday 8 o'clock, Sunday, 2:30.
We're talking about the Mahler 8th, Symphony of a Thousand. And tickets, information, all available at the Madison Symphony website. How do you pace yourself doing multiple performances of something this, I would imagine, taxing?
Well, I mean, and I've just come off two performances of Rusalka, so I've been doing both preparation of these giant pieces at the same time. Well, I mean, I'm not worried about myself. I take a little nap in the afternoon, try to go under, and even if it's just for 5 or 10 minutes, but it renews my energy for the night. I think the bigger challenge is to the chorus and the soloists, because they're knocking out all kinds of high C's, and the sopranos are, you know. But, I mean, these are big voices, and they have really great stamina. But still, it is three giant performances back-to-back. The chorus has to scream their heads off, you know. I mean, they've got to really sing thrillingly, and they've got to rehearse all week. So they've been with me Tuesday, Wednesday. Tonight is dress rehearsal. Tomorrow's the performance. So, I mean, and Saturday and Sunday. So they're singing six nights in a row. So I would imagine tonight they might hold back a little bit, which is fine with me, because we sort of know, we sort of have our balances. Now we just need to, you know, get our through line going. But, and it's even the same thing with the horns. I mean, everybody has to pace themselves, because you're playing three nights, you know. This mm-hmm. orchestra, when I got here 25 years ago, was playing one concert on a Saturday night. And so when we first went to two, that was fine. But when Overture Hall opened and we went to three performances, which is sort of unheard of in any other city of this size in the country. We're the only orchestra that has this because of all the wonderful people out there who support us. That is normal for a major orchestra, like the Houston Symphony or Philadelphia Orchestra. They're used to that. This was a big leap for our musicians to go to that. But they've been doing that now. Mm-hmm. So they have a sense of how to pace themselves. I think the biggest concern of the two choruses is that they don't talk during the daytime and keep themselves fresh.
Well, while we have you here, we wanted to talk a little bit about the upcoming season. But first, why don't we listen to some more music and hear something that's coming up. And it's, let me find my disc. It's something that you've not played before, which was interesting. It's music of Prokofiev.
Eight.
This is the Lieutenant Kije Suite. Do you have a preference for what we listen to? It's your choice.
Not really.
Well, I'll pick, why don't we start with one of the lesser known parts of it, relatively speaking, and then we'll hear the famous Troika, the sleigh ride movement. This is, speaking of the Philadelphia Orchestra, this is a recording from the early 70s, Eugene Ormandy conducting. Again, this is music by Prokofiev. Music from the Lieutenant Kije Suite by Prokofiev, taken from a film score. The Philadelphia Orchestra, directed by Eugene Ormandy here. And it's one of the pieces featured in the upcoming season of the Madison Symphony Orchestra. John DeMaine, conductor, is here. We'll be talking about that piece and others in just a couple of minutes. Also coming up, today's quiz question. Stay tuned. Back to the music. We're talking about the upcoming season of the Madison Symphony Orchestra. And you were saying this is the Prokofiev we just heard. This will be the first time you've ever played that piece.
Right. That's the first. It's kind of a Prokofiev. There's quite a bit of Prokofiev on the season. I mean, we're doing the Prokofiev Third Piano Concerto with pianist Joyce Wang. We're doing, I'm very excited also about the, you know, we've been doing this beyond the score for the past couple of seasons, and more than past couple seasons, but it's a wonderful way to get a more in-depth look at a piece of music through its historical and background, the inspirational background that for the composer, and also the composer himself in terms of what led him to writing this piece of music. Well, in the case of Prokofiev, we're talking about somebody who was a child listening to Tchaikovsky and going to those Tchaikovsky ballets when he was growing up. So he passed through all those generations, you know, and then he's a contemporary of Shostakovich, and this piece is coming at the end of the war, Second World War, 1945. It's his most, I think after the Classical Symphony, is his most popular symphony. The Fifth Symphony is a phenomenal piece of music. But it has influences that go all the way back to those ballets of Tchaikovsky. And so through Beyond the Score, you get we'll play some of those pieces, you know, in excerpts where you see the connection as how it connects to the Fifth Symphony. And also, you know, writing this during the time of the Second World War, as the Second World War is about to come to an end, or is just over, I think, in 1945, I think that there will be so much incredible history to look at, you know, Stalin's role with the composers, you know, and how they had to interface with him and be able to be creative and still be played, and yet at the same time looking at other Russian influences that go find their way to the piece, and just how Prokofiev himself evolved as a very special composer. So, and as always, we have our wonderful star performers from American Players Theater, APT, and next January it will be James Ridge, Colleen Madden, Marcus Trushinsky, Tracy Arnold. And then since there's since Prokofiev also was a great composer for the piano, Dan Lyons, our pianist, will be playing as well, featured. So that's going to be quite something. And I would encourage everybody not to miss that, because the visuals as well as the music. You know, the way Beyond the Score works is we do about an hour and 10 minutes of this fantastic multimedia presentation. And then we have an intermission, and then we play the piece. And hopefully you're listening to the piece with a whole new perspective on it, and it deepens your listening pleasure.
You've done a few of these, haven't you?
Yeah. We started with Dvorak's New World, and then we did Scheherazade, and we've been regularly doing a lot of these pieces.
You also have coming up on the season some familiar music by Haydn, which I happen to have some already prepared here that we could listen to. You're doing the so-called Miracle Symphony.
That's a first for us too. That performance will be a first for the Madison Symphony. You know, when I say a first, when the orchestra was an amateur orchestra almost 100 years ago, I don't count that, but I sort of count once Rollin Johnson came and they started paying the musicians and Michael Olson started keeping program notes and program history, and that dates back now 40 years, 50 years. So, I mean, so we know that piece hasn't been played in the last 50 years. And it will be conducted by Kenneth Woods, who grew up in Madison and now has an international career as a conductor, and he will be guest conducting this because I'm in Washington doing something else.
Do you think the story is true, you know, the legend about why it's called the Miracle Symphony? People rushing to the front and escape the falling chandelier?
Who knows? It's like the Handel Messiah, and everybody's supposed to stand, and that probably never happened.
I hope it's true. It's one of those, of course. Such a great story. You hope it's true. Well, why don't we hear some music from that, and in just a few minutes we'll also repeat today's quiz question. I'm with John Demain, conductor of the Madison Symphony Orchestra, talking about some things coming up in the next season. More information about that just ahead, but right now, this music by Haydn. This is the Concertgebouw Orchestra of Amsterdam. Thank you. music by Haydn from his so-called Miracle Symphony, the Concertgebouw Orchestra of Amsterdam, conducted by Bernard Haitink. One of the pieces featured on the upcoming Madison Symphony Symphony season, and John Demain, conductor, is here with us in the studio. We'll be talking a bit more about that and some highlights coming up in just a moment. And John Demain is here with us talking about the upcoming season of the Madison Symphony Orchestra and that Haydn we just heard, another relative first, as you said. What are some other highlights coming up?
Well, I like to combine, you know, pieces you haven't heard before, and also I try to get a piece that has been written in the 21st century and feature American composers, as well as playing, audience favorites, because I think that's an important component. So on the first concert, we have Dvorak Symphony No. 7, and this is the one where we throw focus on the musicians of the orchestra, and this year our soloist will be our sort of superstar organist, Greg Zelick, who's taken everybody by storm between his wonderful repartee at concerts and then his phenomenal playing, and so that's been really great. So we're going to feature him in the Barber Toccata Festival, which is an audience pleaser piece, and he'll play it just incredibly. And then we have a debut, Rachel Barton Pine, a violinist, and a first performance of the Cacciatorian Violin Concerto by this orchestra. And that's, of course, the concert in which Lieutenant Kiji is playing. And then the other person from that same period, Shostakovich. So it's Symphony No. 9. So it's an all Russian program, which I love to do because I love Russian music a lot, particularly from that period. It's just an amazing period.
What draws you to that?
Well, you know, it speaks to me because it represents the 20th century. But there are composers who still, you know, use tonality, use structure that's absolutely recognizable and the audience can fall in love with, and at the same time is inventive as we continue since the end of the Romantics and the introduction of the Impressionists complete, you know, to push the envelope in terms of harmonic development, but they're not 12-tone composers. And I find that as we get further and further away from that, when you think of who was writing at the turn of the century, you still had Richard Strauss, you still had Debussy and Ravel well into the century, Prokofiev well into the century, Shostakovich well into, Stravinsky. So, and these are just giants. And I think also, you know, the orchestra has grown in size and color, and the emergence of percussion instruments playing a bigger role in the writing of these orchestral pieces. And it just uses the orchestra in a developed way. And I find myself very drawn to that. Aaron Kernis, wonderful contemporary composer who's played by everybody, and he's a piece, Newly Drawn Sky, which is a very evocative and very beautiful piece, and so that will be my 21st century work. We, of course, will have two stunning soloists at Christmas, Mackenzie Whitney and Michelle Johnson, both stars of past productions of Madison Opera, and Mackenzie will be starring as the tenor in the fall presentation of La Traviata coming up. And Michelle thrilled us all with Cavalleria and Pagliacci. She's a phenomenal singer. And I think she'll also be with us in Opera in the Park, so we'll get a lot of chance to hear her. Superstar Pinchas Zukerman comes with his wife, Amanda Forsyth. Years ago, they played together the Brahms double with a guest conductor. This will be my first time to do the Brahms double. And, of course, one of my favorite pieces is the Aaron Copland Symphony No. 3, a big, gigantic orchestral work. The fanfare for the common man is buried inside, so that'll be great. And the guest conductor, Kenneth Woods, will do Strauss's Ein Heldenleben. The Mendelssohn Violin Concerto is featured in that concert. First performance by this gigantic work by Dvorak, his Requiem. And we have four stunning singers and the Madison Symphony Chorus. And, of course, Dvorak only knows how to write beautiful music, so I'm excited about that. Then we close the season. Normally we close with a choral piece, but we were able to get Yefim Bronfman, and he could come to us in May. And, of course, he's one of the world's giant pianists. He's absolutely phenomenal. His last appearance here just blew us out of the room. And he's going to play the Brahms First Piano Concerto and another Stravinsky, Petrushka. And that, of course, is a delightful piece. And I've been looking for a way to play it again. We played it when I first got here, but I was just looking for a way to play it again. So those are just some of the highlights of the season, and looking forward to
Sounds
it.
Sounds fantastic. And
you'll notice there's nobody on the season. There's one person who's not on the season, big time, that I always have on the season. Beethoven. So there's no Beethoven for a reason. You know the reason. The following year is the 250th anniversary for Beethoven. So I'm planning a big Beethoven celebration. So I thought I'll give the audience a chance not to hear too much Beethoven, but not that you can ever get enough Beethoven, but we're going to really make something out of that. You only get that 250 once. So
something to look forward to as is the upcoming season. And a reminder, the performance this weekend, performances of the Mahler Symphony No. 8, and information and tickets, all of the things you need to know, available at the Madison Symphony website. John DeMaine, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.